Hi, my name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'll be moderating today's webinar on tips to improve your sales and marketing. Collection agencies are fighting harder for clients than ever before, and separating themselves from one another is incredibly important, which puts a lot of pressure on an agency's sales and marketing efforts. We're fortunate to have a pair of experienced sales and marketing executives from the credit and collections industry with us today, who are here to share their tips and insights into how collection agencies can win more business. This webinar is being generously sponsored by Microbuilt. You'll get the chance to hear more about them a little later in our program. I want to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the ARM industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use, and it's a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Let me tell you a little bit now about today's speakers. Joe Gelbart is the Chief Revenue Officer at True Accord, a high-growth fintech business disrupting the collections industry as we know it. True Accord uses machine learning and automation to optimize the collections process for some of the world's largest financial institutions. Prior to joining True Accord, Joe was one of the first team members at LiveVox, and served as its Executive Vice President of Sales. Chris Ruppholz is the Chief Customer Officer for MRS BPO, a New Jersey-based, nationally recognized accounts receivable management firm, specializing in first-party servicing and third-party recoveries in a variety of verticals. He first started working in the contact center industry in 1994 and co-founded TPG Telemanagement, a contact center consulting firm, in 1996. In 2004, he joined Zenta, an international BPO. In 2011, after Accenture acquired Zenta, Chris joined IntelliSource as SVP of their call center outsourcing division, managing operations and customer service, collections, fraud management, and commercial sales. Chris joined MRS as Chief Operating Officer in 2014 and transitioned to his current role in 2016, where he is responsible for client services, sales and marketing, corporate development, and acquisitions. The format for today's webinar will be a panel discussion. We encourage everybody to submit questions, and we'll get to them when the discussion has concluded. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. This event is being recorded, and a recording will be made available in the coming days on accountsrecovery.net. With that, let's jump into today's discussion. Joe will ask you the first question. When you're out there competing for business from a client, where do you see most other agencies fall short with respect to their sales and marketing efforts?
Thanks, Mike. I think people fall short. They take no too early, and they leave the process. One thing I've noticed quite a bit is there's just a lot of change in the decision-making process at the client level, and a lot of times people that are pushing back on you for one reason or another wind up leaving the company. And so I think it's really important to make sure that, when you talk to clients and potential clients, that you're not focused on one point of contact. That you're talking to, you're really talking to a wide group of people at an organization to get a full picture. And even here, when I've made mistakes or we've made mistakes, it's taking no for an answer too early in the process and not sticking with it.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Mike. I think there's two things. We work in an industry with a really long sales cycle. And as Joe said, I think salespeople often fall into two mistakes at opposite extremes. They take no too easily and give up and then move on. Or they are too aggressive and don't respect the prospective client's timeline. They just constantly call them over and over again, and they expect some kind of an update every month when there's not really an update. And if you listen to your prospective customers, more often than not, they will tell you what the situation is and what the real timeline is. And, you know, I think that that turns a lot of people off. And I know for a fact that it does. And just coming back from the RMA last week, we were invited to a meeting from a creditor with an RFP coming up in the next like 9 or 10 months. And they got everyone together to say, we're going to give you all the information you need right now. If you're in this room, you have a shot at this. Please do not call me every month to get an update. There will be no further updates until this RFP is released. And that meeting took place just because there's too often the sales folks out there don't respect what the prospects tell them and do make a nuisance of themselves. And I think that that really represents your organization very poorly. I also think one of the other things where companies, another area where companies really fall short is that they market themselves as something that they're not. And if you are, if you're claiming that you're great at something, if you have a specialty that you feel like you're the best at and you generate traction for that type of service and then you get business, but it's not something you're very good at, you really, you can burn bridges very, very quickly. And I think that one of the things that we spend a lot of time focusing on at MRS is really selling and marketing what we, who we are and what we do. And we're very, very authentic about it. And when you meet us in the field, if you meet us at a conference and then you come to visit us, you will see exactly what we told you we are. We don't dress up anything that doesn't exist. We're extremely transparent. And I think that's a really important way to distinguish yourselves.
So getting back to this idea of taking no for an answer too quickly, but at the same time, not sort of being overly aggressive, that seems to be a very delicate balancing act. So, you know, how do you go about it? Or how would you recommend somebody going about doing that, Joe?
Well, I think that one thing you consider, and Chris touched on this, is you really need to listen to what the client is saying, versus talking, versus saying, telling them what you're good at and why they should work with you. But really trying to understand what they're trying to accomplish, what they need to accomplish, whether it be an RFP or a special segment of that they want to try and find a way to place. But in the listening process, you also understand a little bit better, or you get a fuller grasp of what other initiatives they may have going on in the organization. There might be a system transition, or you know, something along those lines, system conversion, and so, you know, listening to what they have to say and what's important to them is really a better way than bombarding them with phone calls and asking them the same question over and over again. And that's how you can generate a relationship and generate an ability to help them solve whatever problem they may have. And I think that's really how you balance it the best.
Yeah, I think building relationships with people is really critical, and that's the hard. It's easy to say that, but that's really the hard part. And we've seen time and time again where we've had success based on relationship building. And I have an amazing sales team led by an absolute rock star who is great at just establishing relationships with people and just connecting and networking, knowing that there is definitely a timeline, and sometimes that timeline is 6 months, and in some cases it's 6 years. And I mean that literally. We have this year, we are in the process of closing some deals that began in like the original conversations started in 2011, and one of them even older than that. And the reason that we're still focused on them and that they're still talking to us is that Misty, my sales leader, she establishes a relationship with them, and she's very authentic about it. And she knows that it's going to take some time. And, you know, just constantly reaching out to them, offering them information, just keeping in touch, providing them with updates about MRS, about things going on in the industry, without every phone conversation or every email saying, so when's your RFP coming out? That goes a long way. And that goes toward relationship building. And I think a lot of salespeople in this industry are, they approach this very transactionally. And it's not, this industry is not a transactional sales marketplace. This industry functions on relationship selling, and you are not entitled to be involved in any type of an RFP or an opportunity. You really have to earn it. And I really do think that sometimes it just takes a long cultivation process, and it takes persistence and patience. If you feel like, you know, you're going to close 10 deals this year, no matter what, you're probably not.
Following up on something you were just talking about, Chris, in terms of that relationship and sort of, you know, reaching out to the client. So instead of just asking, hey, you know, is the RFP ready? Is the RFP ready? Or, hey, how are your kids doing? You mentioned sort of talking about what MRS is doing, sharing things in the industry. Is that something that is sort of an organizational approach to how, you know, how MRS sort of treats, you know, sort of building that relationship?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think it's an organizational approach, and it's a sales and marketing approach. But yeah, we definitely spend a lot of time thinking about what's going on in the industry and what companies that we've talked to, what prospective clients have we talked to, where there may be some interest in some of the innovations that we're working on, some of the new strategies that we're pioneering. And it's always a good way for us to, to just reach out and share, you know, like, hey, have you thought about digital strategies? We've created a texting platform that is generating great results. When you guys are ready to text, you know, we'd love to talk to you about it. And just planting the seed like that, just those little nuggets of information that you send out there, that stuff comes back. And I have seen it time and time again, where the time may not have been right last year or last month, but, you know, suddenly the time is right. And when the time is right, If you have the right solution, or if you've been the one to sort of give them the information they were looking for, you get a seat at the table. You get an opportunity. And we've had many prospects who we've engaged in conversations where we're telling them about something new and different that we're using or that we're doing. They might come back to us and say, "Tell us a little bit about what you're doing. You know, we're not quite sure we're there yet, but if you could give us some information without sharing anything proprietary or telling any state secrets, can you please give us some information about what you're doing and how you're doing it, and maybe some results?" And we'll then, sometimes it requires us to go back and sanitize some data because we're not going to share any client's information, but we'll share that information and we'll tell them, look, here's some of the things we're doing. Here's how we're doing it. Here's some of the pitfalls, here's some of the mistakes we made, here's some of the early successes that we've had. We'll share information we can share, because for us it's important to really articulate that we are different, we're innovative, here's some of the things we're doing, and it's a crowded marketplace and we're always looking for a way to distinguish ourselves and to differentiate ourselves.
Excellent. Well, at this point, I just want to pause the discussion for a minute and talk a little bit about the sponsor of today's webinar, Microbuilt. For more than 35 years, Microbuilt has been helping businesses assess and manage risk. They were a pioneer in the now exploding alternative credit data space, and as such have refined their products and services to deliver true business value. Over the years, Microbuilt has invested heavily in acquiring best-in-class data. They've built sophisticated systems for keeping their data fresh, and accurate and powerful predictive models for making decisions around lending, leasing, collections, and risk management. With Microbuilt, you can customize the products you need and how much you want to spend. And all their products are provided through a single, simple access portal. Whether you're working in originations or debt collection, screening a potential hire or tenant, planning for growth, or keeping up with regulatory requirements, Microbuilt can be your partner providing the insight and information you need to protect your business, grow your bottom line, and keep your company running smoothly. For more information, please contact MicroBuilt today at 800-884-4747 or visit www.microbuilt.com. And MicroBuilt is spelled MicroBuilt, www.microbuilt.com. Thanks again to MicroBuilt for sponsoring today's webinar. And now let's pick back up with our discussion. Joe, one of maybe the biggest issues that collection agencies face is getting a foot in the door with a prospective client so they can start that conversation, start building that relationship. Do you have any ideas that you might be willing to share about how to get, you know, how to break that ice?
Yeah, well, we, at True Accord, we really like to have people come visit visit our agency, visit San Francisco, and see how we're doing what we're doing. And that's that gives us entree into discussing our technology investments, our compliance, and you know we have a great team, and we can really introduce people on a personal level where they can sit down and ask a lot of questions to our operations leaders, our compliance team led by Tim and Tim Collins and you know Kelly Nepper Stevens. They can meet the agents and really get an understanding of how True Accord works in a way that is much more difficult to do when you explain it in front of them, or you know, whether that be on a PowerPoint or a demo or in front of them at their site. So we work really hard to get people to come and see us so that they really get a robust understanding of how we manage the business, and you know, really see where we focus and where we make the most investments, so that they understand, you know, how we're going to perform and how we're going to take care of their customers. And for us, that's been a really great strategy.
I would agree. That's very similar to our line of thinking, but one of the things I want to point out, like, just we were all at RMA last week, and one of the things that absolutely is sales prevention is when you are trying to set up appointments for a conference like RMA, whether it be RMA or CRS or any of the other conferences that we all attend, and I experienced this a dozen times over the last month. Getting a voicemail: "Hi, Chris, this is so-and-so from so-and-so company. Give me a call back at, you know, 1-800, blah, blah, blah. Thanks." I have no idea who those people are. There's no chance I'm going to call them back from a voicemail like that. So that to me is absolute sales prevention. That is bad sales technique. It generates nothing but annoyance. In fact, I don't remember one company that they called me and left me a voicemail like that. So it really goes back to what I was saying earlier, is creating a personal connection, and it's creating some type of a relationship with the prospective customer and giving them a reason to talk to you and earning the right to have a conversation with them. And again, it goes back to what I said earlier. I think it starts with information. I think when you take the time to share information and provide interesting tidbits of whether it be industry info or something else, that's where people will remember you, and that's where you will stand out. You have to understand what makes your prospect tick. You have to understand what is interesting to them, what specific issues may be really relevant to their company or to their initiatives, and give them information that's going to help them.
So putting you on the spot, what should that voicemail have said in order to get somebody to either, you know, for you to call them back or to agree to a meeting with somebody?
Well, if you're really just cold calling somebody to try and get an appointment, the voicemail should at least explain why you're calling. It should at least give me a reason to to dial the phone and potentially call them back. Just a name and a phone number is not enough. We all have enough noise in our life. We all spend half of our days in meetings or in on phone calls that we probably could do without being involved in. And just there has to be a reason to pick up the phone. So I think it needs to be, there needs to be a hook. And you can, there can be a variety of hooks. It can be the information or the tidbit that I, you know, that I was discussing earlier, or throw out a probing question or a qualifying question. There has to be something to hook you to drive that phone call back. But just from my vantage point, it seems like that's an entitlement mentality. Like, I called you, you have to call me back. I'm entitled to a phone call back. And you're not. You're not entitled. So you really have to make yourself stand out. And I think that that style does not make you stand out at all.
At least some people were willing to leave a voicemail. It seems like today just a missed call is enough to sort of, you know, generate an expectation that someone's going to call you back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe a lawsuit.
Joe, going back to what you were mentioning about getting people to visit San Francisco, do you find that, you know, that you can do that sort of, at, you know, early in the sales process, that people are willing to come out, or is that something that has to wait till after you sort of started to build a relationship with somebody?
Well, you know, what we do is generally different than most other agencies. And so
right.
People are really interested, tend to be interested in learning more. We're also in San Francisco, which is, you know, on some accounts more attractive to visit than other parts of the country, especially in the winter. You know, when it's a large creditor, they know up front, we jointly know that it's going to be, you know, it's a large investment, time investment from both parties. And so pretty early on in the process, they'll take the time to come see us. And that may occur after a visit or two from us, but they will want to, because, you know, ultimately they're going to be making a decision to, you know, to work with us. And as I said earlier, it's just a lot easier if they can come and sit down, meet our analytics team, you know, understand how we manage the amount of business that we have with so few agents. So it tends to happen relatively early in the process, and we push for it because we think it's really important, not only from a self-serving perspective, but so that when we have someone who's really interested in working with us, that you know, they're able to take a lot of information back that we'll arm them with to the rest of the team, so that you know, we start to get the rest of a large bureaucratic organization comfortable working, you know, working with an agency that is, you know, 100% digital.
We have no problem getting people to come to Cherry Hill, New Jersey. So I don't know about that. You know, we have visitors all the time, but we do believe that the site visit is really important. And for us, it's probably a similar scenario, a little different though, in terms of our client base, which tends to be financial services, both large auto captives and credit card and bank issuers. For them, the site visit's really critical because site security and compliance is always one of the top priorities for them. And they can't even really go too far down the rabbit hole without coming out to a site and looking to ensure that we have the level of IT security that will allow them to do business with us. So that's really kind of, you know, a lot of times it starts at that level. It starts with the site visit. And once the site gets blessed, then the business people can come out and begin the process. But it is absolutely critical. We want people to come here. When they come here, they see not just the site security and all of the IT security we have in place, but they see the people, they see the culture. We're a 28-year-old company. We've got a lot of long-term employees, a lot of tenure, and there's a lot of passion for what we do here. And we want people to come in and see it. It's really important. And when we get somebody in the building, they end up doing business with us. We have a really strong record in that regard because they really can see that everything we're talking about is really does exist at our in our facilities.
Do you think that the same strategy works for maybe agencies that are either smaller or are looking to, you know, to win business from smaller accounts, say like local dentist office or, you know, the local utility? Does trying to get somebody into the office still work just as well?
I don't think so. I don't think they place the same level of importance on that type of either security or culture. I think for them, it's really more transactional. When you're talking about large issuers or large auto captives or large student lending, there it's more of a relationship and more of a, there's more of a security and a culture thing to it, but you know, small transactions, not so much.
Yeah, I agree. For the most part, I agree because, you know, what I would think of as a more naive buyer, someone who doesn't work with collection, you know, they may not work with any other collection agencies, is much less inclined to care about the things that, say, a large bank would. You know, they don't view regulation in the same way that a small technology business, you know, they're happy to get the benefit of working with a company who also has large financial institutions as a client, but they're not nearly as concerned as those large financial institutions, which by the way means that you know, the sales cycle is a lot shorter with that type of client too.
Yeah, that's true.
Speaking of the sales cycle, at what point do you normally see deals tend to break down? You know, whether it be with a small client or a large client, if it's different, and what advice would you give to agencies about how to avoid that? Maybe Chris, you can take this first one this time.
Well, it's a little hard for me to answer because we generally, well, let me put it this way. Where there has been some breakage, it's generally been on the client side because of something that might be system related. We don't really see deals breaking down based on anything that we've done that we feel like we can avoid. We've had, you know, there's been one or two where there was an acquisition or there was a system conversion that was much more difficult than they thought, and it was going to put the brakes on everything. But in each of those cases, the thing that we have done is we've just stayed patient and persistent because we know that if they liked us enough that they were going to do business with us, that if we stick with them and work with them through the challenges, then we'll eventually do business with them. So it may not be on our timeline, but you know, we'd rather wait and have that client at some point than just be frustrated and walk away. That's the one piece of advice I would give is just stick with them. Don't walk away because there are things that happen that are completely out of our control. And, you know, I think Joe and I probably are, you know, we all have clients that are going through systems conversions. There's a lot of systems conversions going on in this industry right now. And there's nothing we can do about it. As from an agency standpoint, there's nothing we can do about it. Just have to deal with it and work through it and be patient.
Yeah, I tend to agree. There are a lot of system conversions taking place for sure. But I think deals also break down when you don't have the right alignment. And, you know, if you're not, you know, if you're not aligned with enough people within either the organization you're selling to or the organization or internally, and making sure that you know, you really understand the requirements from a that, you know, that a client has in order for them to place business with you is you know, incredibly important, and you need to be know every detail. Otherwise, you get deeper into it, and there may be something that you're unaware of, or on their side that you haven't made them aware of, that are, you know, that can slow things down, or potentially potentially end the deal. So I think really trying to understand as much of that, all of the details up front, making sure that enough people on the client side are really aligned. You know, again, we do things differently than most traditional agencies, or we do some things differently. Our communication strategy is different, so we can't rely on, you know, an agency manager that we really like to call all the shots and just assume that that person is, is capable of making a decision for an entire organization, especially if it's a really big one. If it's a smaller business, then that's, that may be possible, but for a larger business, we need, you know, executive buy-in, and, you know, really across many different departments.
We talked a little bit about it, and Joe, you mentioned sort of doing your homework in advance of making that first call. Curious if you could expand and talk about what kind of research the agency should be doing about a prospective client, before reaching out and having a conversation.
Really understanding the things that, really trying to understand the things that are important to your company. For example, if, it might be a really interesting brand that wants to work with you, but the requirements could be, incredibly burdensome, and the amount of business that they have to place may not be worth the investment. So really understanding the size of the opportunity, understanding something Chris said that I thought made a lot of sense which is, if you're good at something, you should be talking about it, but really you don't want to pretend to be good at something, because ultimately you're going to waste a lot of people's time on the client side and yourself. So if it's a type of business that you really are may not be have a track record in, you need to be upfront about that. And I think so doing as much due diligence as possible, and it also comes back to to establishing relationships within organizations so they can give you that pertinent information. And I'm not talking about, hey, like if you price it this way or this way, you're gonna win. But really understanding all the details of what they have, what they could potentially place with you, what the decision making process is, all of those things are really important as you get into a sale process, so that you're armed with as many answers, or you can go find the answers that are going to help you make a decision. Whether you want to invest in that relationship or, potentially not.
Yeah, I don't have a lot to add. I think Joe answered that question really well. And I think my advice would be know the prospect, know their industry, know what their issues are, know what their hot buttons are. Joe made a great point. If you are not already an expert at their specific industry or their vertical, do not pretend to be one. If you're trying to break into that vertical, that's perfectly fine. We've done that. We've entered a number of verticals in the last 8 or 9 years that historically the company didn't have any real experience in. But we went into it saying, listen, this is not something we have a lot of experience in, but let us tell you why we think we would be good at this. And that type of candor gets you a lot of opportunity. It doesn't always, you don't always win the deal and you don't always get to advance, but you at least get the opportunity to have a discussion. I think it's really important to know what that what's really, you really need to know what is important to that client. You need to know what they manage their business to. Is it compliance? Is it performance? Is it quality? Knowing those things helps you advance your conversation.
How do you learn that? It sort of seems a little circular, like, you know, where a job won't hire you unless you've got experience, but you can't get experience unless you get a job. How do you know what a client's potential hot button issue is, you know, sort of going in without really having that conversation first to find out what that hot button issue is?
That's a good question. I would have asked that if I were you too, Mike.
Thank you.
The easy answer to that is that we all work in this industry. We all know each other. We all network together at conferences and we all talk to each other. So do your research. There's a lot of information on the internet, but also knowing other salespeople or other marketing people, other people at other agencies, just share information. You may have some information that's important to them and vice versa. And, you know, if you network well and you have a lot of contacts, and again, I'll go back to Misty, she's got contacts everywhere in this industry and she's helped people with information and they help her. And that type of homework goes a long way. Knowing a little bit about who you're talking to, you know, sometimes you do have to have a conversation cold. But if you have some information, you know a little bit about their history, you can advance the conversation a lot quicker that way.
Yeah.
Good advice.
Yeah, it is.
Joe, wondering, you know, I think Chris's point is excellent about sort of knowing and using the industry to sort of pick up intelligence. But my question is, how does an agency stand out from one another when marketing their prospective, you know, or marketing to prospective clients? Is it just sort of focusing on what makes your agency different from other agencies? You know, how do you sort of approach that conversation or that part of the conversation?
Well, I think for TrueAccord, it's a little bit different. Not 100%, but it's definitely different. In that, you know, we use, you know, machine learning and a digital strategy to optimize the collection process. You know, and make probably over, you know, 95% less phone calls than somebody else who would be managing the same number of accounts. And people know who we are at this point, because we have a lot of large clients and, we've been fortunate to grow really fast. And again, I don't mean that to sound self-serving, but from my perspective, people don't come to me people will come to us looking to learn. And they will come to us looking to how people work with us, no matter what the size of the client is. That doesn't mean we don't have an aggressive outbound sales effort. We do. And just because somebody's interested and knocking on your door doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to give you business. But, we've just established ourselves as approaching the collections process differently than other large agencies. And so one thing I think is, you know, like I said, we have people coming inbound and looking to, you know, either one end of the spectrum is looking to understand how we do what we do. The other end of the spectrum is they call us and say, hey, we'd love to find a way to work together. Those are fantastic phone calls. I think Chris probably has a better answer for the industry at large and how you differentiate. So I'll throw it to you, Chris, to see how you what your thoughts are.
Sure. Well, one thing I think really stands out is high turnover of sales staff. That's one bad way to differentiate yourself. If you have consistency as an organization, if you have consistency in your sales staff, that sends a really positive message, because if somebody works at a company for a long time in a sales role, it immediately tells a prospect that, one, this person works, they must work for a good company, they must like it, and two, clearly they're productive and successful because they're still there. And that means that they're selling things and the clients are retained and you have happy clients. So I think that's one important way to stand out. And I say that, you know, sort of flippantly, but there's a lot of turnover and there's a lot of people in this industry that every other year I run into them and get a different business card. And that says a lot, whether it, you know, unfortunately the reality is it does say a lot. The other thing that we focus on, there's a couple areas where we really focus. We're constantly innovating. We do things differently. We have a slightly different focus from TrueAccord in that we come from the traditional call center based collection industry, but we are innovative in other ways, in omni-channel between email and text and chat, and we've got a virtual collection agent that we're building with AI and voice recognition. So we're doing a lot of things differently too, and telling that story and telling of all the advances that we're making in that as we speak to prospective customers is important. And that shows that we're an innovative and different type of organization. If your salespeople are telling the same canned story over and over again, it's going to fall on deaf ears. And the other thing we focus on is just overall involvement in the industry. We're very involved. We've got our chief risk and security officer is part of the Consumer Relations Consortium. We're members of ACA. We're members of RMA. I'm on the Experian Executive Collections Council. We try to really participate in places in the industry that make a difference and where we can share best practices, because I really do believe this industry is one where a rising tide raises all boats. I think we all have to help each other because we're, to some extent, we're always sort of under attack. And I think it's good if we all work together. So our message is, you know, it's always one of passion and innovation and involvement. We feel like we need to be a really important part of the industry and be a good example. And that's how we differentiate ourselves, is just the level of involvement that you'll find from various people at MRS across different areas of the industry.
Great answer, and bonus points for using one of my favorite quotes in a rising tide lifts all boats. Circling back to you, Chris, let me ask you, we've talked about sort of going after big clients. We've talked about going a little bit about going after small clients. Is there an ideal mix that a collection agency should be looking at, or, you know, any thoughts on how an agency should structure its sales efforts in terms of the types of clients it's going after?
I think that depends on, excuse me, the size and level of maturity of the agency. So if you're relatively, you know, if you're a new or younger agency, maybe you're building your infrastructure with smaller clients, but at some point, I think you have to decide where you want to put your effort. So we're getting bigger and bigger, and it's harder for us to service very small clients today, because sometimes a small client is extremely high maintenance and requires a lot of attention, and we just can't provide that based on the amount of business that they provide. So I think you have to be... We've spent a lot of time thinking about it and being a little bit more disciplined, and we've parted ways as friends with some clients and said, listen, we're probably not the right servicer for you anymore, you know, and I think if you do it right, you can have those conversations. So I think that's kind of a hard question, Mike, because it really does depend on your size your growth rate and, you know, just where you spend your time and effort.
But I guess maybe maybe a better question to ask or a better way to ask it is, you know, should an agency just sort of throw its net as wide as it can, or should it have a targeted or systematic or deliberate approach in how it's identifying and going after its prospects?
That's a double-edged sword, because if you throw your net too wide, you may find it full of some fish that there's no way you can pull on board the boat, and then you're right. Wasting a lot of time and brain damage, and you're not getting any business. If you have never done financial services work, trying to land Cap One or Citibank as your first is about as foolish a thing as you could possibly do, because you're just not going to be set up to deal with their security and requirements. So, you know, I think you have to be intentional about what you're going after, and you have to be reasonably realistic about what you can service and what it takes to get you to the next level.
Makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Go ahead, Joe.
I was going to say, you also have to, when you balance large clients and small clients, and by the way, that means different things for different agencies. But you do have to be very thoughtful about it, because large clients take a different investment profile. I mean, you really have to, as Chris was alluding to, you need security and all types of infrastructure that you may not need for a smaller client. But at the same time, smaller clients need to, smaller clients need to yield in a way that that a large smaller client, they can't take up as much time as a big client. And so you have to have a strategy and an understanding of what that means and the balance, because if you have small clients that eat up as much time as large clients, then you will not be allocating your resources appropriately. But again, I think it just means different things for different agencies. The one thing that's consistent is that you need to be thoughtful about it and really have tough conversations. And if a client doesn't make sense for you to either continue working with, or a client doesn't make sense for you to bring on, then be thoughtful and try to make a decision as fast in the process as possible.
Good advice. Joe, have you noticed any changes in the conversations that you've been having with prospects during the past year in terms of the content of the conversations, or are you having more or less? Any trends that you've noticed?
Well, I'm an optimist, so I think I sense more optimism in the industry. I mean, I do think that people are concerned about a recession and nobody's excited for a recession. I have heard that consistently, and I have no way of knowing, when or if that would potentially happen. But I think people feel better about where we are today versus where we have been in the past. When the CFPB got started, there was a lot of there was a lot of people who were scared and thought that they would try to put the industry out of business or put people out of business. And, there's certainly been some hardship, but I think, you adapt and people have gotten stronger. Now, there seems to be consensus that a rule will be coming out soon. So that'll be interesting. But if passes prologue, whatever is in that rule will hopefully provide a lot of guidance for people and allow them to make changes accordingly. But generally speaking, I think people are optimistic and really think that the industry is in a position to excel. So we're really excited about where things are going.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think there's a lot less concern about the regulatory environment today. Not to say that compliance isn't still important, because it is, but certainly I sort of regard 2012 to 2016 as a nuclear winter for this industry. And a lot of those elements are gone. Creditors are selling again. Creditors are onboarding new agencies. You know, there's definitely less concern about the regulatory environment and legislation through enforcement that happened previously. I think some of the other things that we're hearing a lot, Joe mentioned it, definitely recession is part of it. About one third of our business is first party, and so our first party clients have started talking about, you know, what are the opportunities for expansion if we go into a recession, because that's always the first line of defense. I think there's two other areas that we're hearing a lot of chatter. One is positive and one is negative. I think there's renewed, and this is good news for MRS and TruAccord. I think there's renewed interest in innovation. I think there's a lot of clients in the marketplace that are very concerned with right party contact rates and answer rates, and they are looking for new solutions, and those solutions are digital, and they have some concerns around it, but they're looking for the early adopters and the innovators, and we're hearing more of that than we have in the previous few years. And then the flip side of that is concerns about call blocking and concerns on whether stir-shaken is implemented correctly, and time will tell. But that certainly has a huge impact on the industry, and I don't think anyone has a really great answer for where that's going to land.
Well, first of all, bonus points to Joe for Patch's prologue. Great quote. Second, Chris's comments allow me to plug the digital communication survey that I've been doing at accountsrecovery.net over the last couple of weeks. We've got about 100 responses from agencies of all shapes and sizes about the types of email or text messaging or other direct on voicemails or other digital communication tools they're using, and how well they've been working or not been working. So look for that in the coming weeks. We'll have a report out on that. And I'm excited to get that out. Microbuilt is also a sponsor of that. So thanks to Microbuilt for that. Moving on to our next topic before we wrap up. Again, we've only got a few minutes left. So if you've got a question from the audience, now's the time to type it in and get it to Joe or Chris before we wrap up. Wondering about the benefits of testimonials. Are those something that agencies should be using? Keeping in mind that, you know, we're talking about agencies that may be going after smaller clients as well as larger clients. Do testimonials tend to work? And if they do, you know, what's the best way to try and go about getting one? Chris, can you take that one first?
Sure. I think testimonials are really useful, and we use them extensively. And if you have happy clients, it's easy to get them. So we definitely use that as a strategy. I think the best way to do it is have a relationship manager call and ask them and say, we need some testimonials for a prospective client. Would you be willing to offer that? And some clients have rules where they're not allowed, and some have rules where they're not allowed to put anything in writing, but they can have a conversation. So always prep them. But I think it's powerful, and we're big believers in it.
Yeah. I don't have anything to add. We use testimonials quite a bit. And I think you really earn testimonials. So if you do a great job for your clients, you shouldn't be shy about asking them.
Do you find that, you know, agencies need some, or sorry, clients need some coaching in how to write them? Do you offer to write them for them? You know, what's usually that process and how does it work best?
We generally just tell them to answer the questions and speak honestly, because we don't feel like we have to coach them. I mean, we have very close relationships with our clients, and it's a very organic process. So we just ask the clients that we want to be used for testimonials. Just, they're going to ask you some questions. Just tell them the truth about us.
Yeah. The only thing I would add that, you know, don't, you don't need a a giant bank to do a testimonial for a doctor's office, and vice versa doesn't really work. So we try to align the testimonials with the person that, or with the company that we're talking to. So if we're talking to a bank, then we would ask another bank or a couple other banks to talk to the bank. If it's a technology business local in San Francisco, then that might be, you know, we have a lot of those that we would make introductions or ask to do a testimonial for.
Got it. Are there other promotional tools that you've seen or used that have been effective in terms of either winning new business, getting a foot in the door, you know, making a splash from a, you know, from a promotional standpoint?
I think websites. I mean, you know, everybody goes right to the website, and this industry has some really bad websites. So I think that's an area, and we were in that category up until last year. We really spent a lot of time last year realigning our website more to our culture and to tell our story. I think that's an area where everyone needs to spend a little time and money, because it's the first place anybody goes to get some information about you.
Yeah.
Don't pull any punches, Chris.
Yeah. There are some bad.
Go ahead, Jeff. Sorry.
Yeah, there. I would agree. There's some bad websites, but we use social media and whatever's available to promote, whether it be an idea or a situation or a event, and you know, we find it to be useful, and our audience is growing, so I think. People in the industry are going to, are using things like LinkedIn more than they have in the past, which is, which is really good.
Excellent. Well, we've reached the top of the hour, but before I let everybody go, what I'd like maybe Chris and Joe to do is just take a minute and either summarize, maybe some of the key points that they've brought up today or heard today, or sort of reinforce some of the takeaways they want people who are listening to walk away from, or maybe just to share one or two more points that they didn't get to address today, but just to sort of take a second and wrap things up. Maybe Chris, you wouldn't mind going first.
I would say be patient and persistent and build relationships.
Well put. Joe?
Yeah, and I would agree with Chris, and also I would agree with Chris on those topics. And I would also say, to the extent that you can, do as much research on the companies that you're looking to potentially work with. One, you'll be informed, and two, when you know things about their business and you can speak intelligently about them, then they will certainly appreciate that. They'll appreciate that effort as well.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate that. Before I let everybody go, I want to thank Joe and Chris one more time for their insights and taking the time to talk with us today. Really appreciate the thoughtfulness that you put into your answers. This webinar would definitely not have been possible without your participation. So Joe, Chris, thanks a lot. Really appreciate it. Also wanted to thank MicroBuilt one more time for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.microbuilt.com to learn more about the company. Thanks to everybody who participated and listened in today. Please stay tuned to accountsrecovery.net for news and more webinars in the near future. And a recording of this event will be posted the next day or so. Hope everyone enjoys the rest of your day. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.